Even if a samurai's head were to be suddenly cut off, he should still be able to perform one more action with certainty. If one becomes like a revengeful ghost and shows great determination, though his head is cut off, he should not die.
Those were some clips from the 1990 film Ghost Dog, a film that explores the intersection between samurai philosophy and black culture. Through the remarkable portrayal of Forrest Whitaker, the film delves deeply into themes of alienation, isolation, a steadfast code of ethics, and the fusion of hip-hop with a film genre that have long overlooked black representation. Ghost Dog dared to challenge the conventional stereotypes of black characters in cinema, offering a multifaceted perspective on black identity. Coming up, we'll talk with documentary filmmaker Chris Everett, who is set to launch the Three Chambers Festival in Wilmington this October.
Even with the kung fu movies to go along with the martial arts, it's also about, you know, fighting oppression. You know, a lot of those old kung fu movies, 36 Chambers, Shaolin, and all the other joints, man, it was all about them, you know, rising up.
Welcome to Shoresides, where we explore the coastal North Carolina region's past, present, and future to promote community resilience. I'm your host, Ren Smith. Today on Shoresides, we're exploring an upcoming cultural event in New Hanover County with our guest, Chris Everett. Chris is a film director and producer, social media strategist, and graphic artist. While directing and producing his first feature-length documentary, Wilmington on Fire, he founded the creative studio Speller Street Films in 2015. Recent projects include the documentary Grandmaster and the sequel to Wilmington on Fire, Wilmington on Fire, Chapter 2. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, how you doing? How you doing?
Could you tell us a little more about yourself? For instance, what got you hooked on documentaries?
Yeah. Well, you know, Chris Everett, born and raised from Laurinburg, North Carolina. I've always been into Black history, African-American history. I grew up right around the block from the historic Laurinburg Institute. The Laurinburg Institute was a black boarding and day school that's been around since 1904. You know, I known the family. That school's been in the family for like three generations, man. The guy who owns it now, his grandparents started that school in 1904. We all went to the same church together. My godfather was the alumni president for years, up until his death some years ago. My grandfather attended there, all my aunts and uncles. So, you know, history and culture has always played a big thing in my life. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I kind of got the interest of documentaries and wanting to explore history and culture, especially in our community. So I think, man, just growing up in Laurinburg, you know, Laurinburg is a small town. And that's why I tell people that you'd be surprised what's in your own backyard. The history and culture that's right there, it's really up to you to highlight it and to bring it to the limelight.
Okay. So with that, let's talk a little about Three Chambers. So we know Three Chambers is, it, if I'm correct, starts October 13th and runs through to October 14th, and it's in Wilmington, North Carolina. Can you give us an idea what the name means to you? Kind of get into a little of what the theme is going to be for this.
The whole concept of Three Chambers came about a couple of years ago, actually. You know, people know me and familiar with me from my work doing Wilmington on Fire, the documentary. You know, that's really what I'm known for, is doing that documentary and also the upcoming sequel as well. But a lot of people didn't realize that I actually had a martial arts documentary in the works, Grandmaster, the Vic Moore story, about martial arts pioneer and four-time champion, Grandmaster Victor Moore. And so with doing that project, I didn't get a lot of support with that one. You know, I got all the support in the world after Wilmington on Fire, the first one came out. And then when the second one started to get in production, so Wilmington on Fire became this already built brand that was easy to market. People were familiar with it. We got a whole bunch of celebrity support with it. But the Grandmaster project was just on an island by itself, couldn't get any support or any audience, any following at all. And I said, man, I got to do something different. I got to do something where we put out this thing and get it ready. We can have that same impact and attention like we did with Wilmington on Fire. And I said, you know, what can I do that can start building some audience and building the type of folks that I want to see this type of project? I say, you know what? I love kung fu movies. I've always been a fan of action films and stuff like that. So I was living in Durham at the time. I said, you know what? Let me go ahead and find a spot where I can start showing some of these old kung fu movies like The Black Dragon's Revenge and stuff like that. And so that's what we did. I partnered with the first ever screening I did was in downtown Durham last year, where we showed The Black Dragon's Revenge starring Ron Van Cleef, showed at the Pinhook downtown Durham, and it was packed. And that's where it all started, this whole thing of coming up with an actual concept of doing a major festival in North Carolina. So it started from just that idea, man, of showing old kung fu movies at a bar, you know, in downtown Durham. And how we had it set up was we had a DJ for the first hour, you know, while people getting their drinks, mingling, stuff like that, spinning Wu-Tang records and stuff like that, just getting the crowd hype and in the mood. And then we would show the film. Also, another cool aspect that we did, that we actually tracked down certain people that were in the film and did pre-recorded Q&As that we would show after the film as well. And so with The Black Dragon's Revenge, I was able to get up with Ron Van Cleef through the help of Grandmaster Moore. They've known each other for the years. They've competed with each other as well back in the day. And so Ron Van Cleef is based in Hawaii. And so we did his interview, little 10-minute short Q&A that we were able to show afterwards. And so we were doing those type of things to kind of go along with these screenings to make them more personal. And what we found out is that a lot of these folks, man, who were in these old kung fu movies, blaxploitation action films, they loved it. They loved that people were still wanting to watch these films and still wanting to engage with them as well.
So why do you think that is, considering, you know, the deep interest folks have in the martial arts? Why has it been more difficult to build that audience?
Well, I think with me, it's because I think, you know, Wilmington on Fire was successful. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the first, you know, documentary on the 1898 mm-hmm. massacre mm-hmm. as well. And so it kind of being the first is something, man, it's like people all, and you see it in all art forms, where if you do well in a certain thing, they want to kind of pigeonhole you. And they just want you in that spot. For example, when Wilmington on Fire came out, then when I was doing part two, a lot of people said, man, you should do a documentary on this race riot, that race riot. And they just wanted to keep me in a box doing documentaries on race riots. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But I'm like, you know, I understand that it's all in good, but it's more to Black history and culture than just getting killed and slaughtered and racism all the time. You know what I'm saying? There's more to our history and culture to that. That's one of the reasons why I did the Grandmaster Project and other projects that are in development, to show the balance, the full spectrum of Black life, Black culture, and Black history.
And you'll be showing the Grandmaster?
We'll be showing some clips, some exclusive clips. The Grandmaster Project won't be ready until next year. Next year's festival, we're definitely going to do a big event with the film. The film will be completed by then. We'll be doing a huge event honoring Grandmaster Moore, and he'll be there in attendance, plus some of the folks that were involved in the film as well. So we're going to save that one for next year. We're going to save it for next year for sure. But Three Chambers, man, it's pretty much, you know, out of doing all these one-off events in the Triangle, Durham, Raleigh, Cary, and then did a couple of here last year, I said, you know what? The folks that I'm working with, we're all in different places. You got folks in D.C., you got cats in Atlanta. So, you know what, let's all just come together once a year. Since we're all doing these things throughout the year, let's join forces, combine, and do something real cool for the city of Wilmington. And I decided to do it really in Wilmington because I live here now. you know, I don't live in the Triangle anymore. So I was very, it was tough, man, to really think about, you know what, I should do this in Cary or in Wilmington or Charlotte, but I decided to do it in Wilmington. So that's pretty much how Three Chambers came about, man. It's really to create a need to build audience for my grandmaster, the Vic Moore Story Project, and also other projects that I want to do around hip hop, martial arts, and stuff like that in the future as well.
Yeah. And could you talk a little about the cultural significance behind the festival?
Yeah. Well, I think, man, just the cultural significance is, you know, like you were talking about earlier, you know, in the intro, man, you know, with Ghost Dog and all these type of things where, you know, martial arts has always played a big, it was always a major influence in Black culture. You know, even we talk about it in my documentary on Grandmaster Moore, and he talks about it, you know, eloquently when we interview him about how he first even got introduced to martial arts. And a lot of African-Americans got their first introduction really was because of World War II. So a lot of the Black soldiers that were stationed in Okinawa and stuff like that, man, learned a lot of that while they were over there. And then, you know, they pieced a lot of stuff together and brought it back. That's how Grandmaster Moore learned. He learned from his next door's neighbor's older brother, who was in the Marines, was stationed in Okinawa, came back. He was doing stuff outside, and Grandmaster Moore and all them, his little kids, they ran up to him and said, man, can you teach us some of this stuff you're doing? And so he started teaching them, and Grandmaster Moore was kind of like one of the only ones that kept coming back every day. And that was his first introduction to martial arts. And so that's how a lot of African-Americans back then got their introduction, was because of folks going to the military. And then some, even in Vietnam, when they went over there, they learned some things. So the military actually helped bring some of that over here to the United States. And that's how we got kind of involved in it, you know, as Black Americans here in the United States. And so,
yeah. No,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just to interrupt you for a second, what do you think is the connection there? Like, I think you and I both kind of understand, have a history with how martial arts like impacts the Black community. Like, I grew up doing martial arts. You know, it was really, really in the culture in a way that is almost difficult to explain. Right. You know, I was in West Philadelphia, and we had guys dressed as ninjas running around, you know? Yeah. And like, but why is that connection so deep, do you think?
I think,
like,
man, I think a lot of it is just what, you know, those principles are, you know, of self-discipline. You know, martial arts does do that. Also, even with the Kung Fu movies that go along with the martial arts, it's also about, you know, fighting oppression. You know, a lot of those old Kung Fu movies, 36 Chambers of Shaolin and all the other joints, man, it was all about them, you know, rising up over an oppressive system. And we related to that more than anybody because of what we dealt with living under Jim Crow segregation. You know, so a lot of us really, you know, honed in on a lot of this stuff, man. And even with the Black Panther movement, you know, a lot of them trained in the martial arts to teach that self-discipline, self-defense. Even the Nation of Islam, man, Malcolm X and all of them, they taught martial arts as well because of self-discipline, control, self-defense. Also. So I think all of those things really is why, you know, we as Black people gravitated towards that culture a lot.
Chris, so what are some of the key highlights and activities that folks who are going to come out to the festival can enjoy?
Well, man, some of the key activities and highlights of the festival is definitely on Friday, October 13th. We're going to kick things off with a live music concert at Waterline Brewery. Doors open at 8, show starts at 9, and we're going to have legend himself, Sky Zoo. A lot of people, you know, known him on the underground scene for a long time. Countless of, you know, classic albums under his belt. He'll be performing as one of the headliners, and also Solomon Brigham of the hip hop group Marlo as well will be performing also. And then we have a couple of Wilmington artists, Lewis the Rapper and Mo SOSDC, that will be opening up for our two artists as well. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. I know with Solemn, you know, him being a part of Marlo. They've kind of blown up over the past few years, doing a lot of commercial placements with their songs. I know Gatorade was a big one that featured one of their songs in one of their major ad campaigns. And, you know, they do a lot of touring overseas. And so this is going to be like a homecoming thing for him. He hasn't performed in Wilmington in a long time. So this is going to be like his first big performance in a very long time, man. And also, I'm just a huge fan of Sky Zoo as well. And so him wanting to be a part of this is just great, man. And the other thing that we have the next day on Saturday, October 14th, is a thing we do called Can I Kick It? And Can I Kick It is where we take a classic martial arts film or an action film and we remix the score live using the DJ turntable set, using hip hop, rock, soul, funk, and more to remix the whole score. And you actually are watching the film in a whole new way with new music to it. And so we're going to actually remix the score to the Brandon Lee film, The Crow. I wanted to do The Crow because it's very symbolic to this area. And folks know that, you know, they made The Crow here back in the day. He also...
Wow, I didn't know that at all. Wow.
Set. Okay. So, yeah, man. So it's very symbolic. Last year, we actually did a Can I Kick It screening at Django's Playhouse of his dad's film, Enter the Dragon. And so I said, you know what? We did his dad's films first. I want to do his next. And so it just lined up perfect, you know, for doing the Can I Kick It film screening of this, you know.
He has three chambers daughter as well.
Okay. Yeah. Shannon Lee. She pretty much runs, you know, the Bruce Lee Foundation and also the Bruce Lee Estate. So.
Okay. So how do you go about selecting the cultural elements you just mentioned, the performances that are featured? And, you know, tell us a little about how it all fits together.
Right. Well, you know, I kind of put this stuff together, man, and I can just take it back from, you know, when we first started doing it. Like recently, this past February, we did a huge event in Cary. So we partnered with the town of Cary earlier this February for Black History Month. You know, I was actually curating some kung fu movies for them, for the Cary Theater, for about a year as well. And I said, you know what, let's do something different for Black History Month. And they said, well, Chris, what do you have in mind? I said, well, let's do something around African-Americans and martial arts. I said, you know, I have a solid rough cut of my documentary on Grandmaster Moore. I can bring him up as well. We can show the rough cut. It's an hour long. We can have folks engage with Grandmaster Moore. We can work with a local martial arts school. They can do a demonstration at the beginning. And so we did that at first for the first day, that Friday, sold out, packed. Then the next day, I partnered with my guy, Shaolin Jazz. They do the whole Can I Kick It series, like we said we're doing with The Crow. And so we did Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. We remixed the score to that live. And actually, man, we were going to have Ty Mock, the guy that plays Bruce Leroy, to come down, but he had some back issues going on. And so he sent me an actual pre-recorded intro, personalized intro that we showed. And also I did a small 10-minute pre-recorded Q&A with him that we showed afterwards. And so When I try to curate this stuff, man, I always look at a lot of factors. One, location. So the reason why I did The Crow, because it was shot here. Brandon Lee was killed here. And the film is very symbolic to the city. And a lot of people really adore that film as well. So I say, you know what? It's a no-brainer, you know, to do that and do that here for this. And then also, Three Chambers and how we want to kind of have it set. We want to do this thing every October because it falls in line around Halloween. Theme of Halloween, dressing up, stuff like that, and fantasy, stuff like that. And so The Crow fits that as well. But then also the hip hop element to it as well. I wanted to find people that had an interest in martial arts, movies, anime culture, and, you know, find folks that really understood the concept, but also could actually rap and perform, you know, as well. That's how I kind of look at it, man. Just try to make sure everything kind of fits in the line and also within budget, within schedule as well, because we had a whole bunch of folks that we reached out to and a lot of people wanted to be involved in this year, but they just couldn't. But next year is going to be something special as well. So this is a thing we're trying to do annually. And I'm already thinking about next year. I'm already thinking about the curation of it as well. So a lot of that stuff goes into factors, mostly budget, location, and the certain theme that I want to kind of have for that.
You mentioned Tay Mack or that's the way I say it, as I've always said his name. I don't know how you actually pronounce it. Timac. All right. That's good. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, why he's important? Give us a little bit about The Last Dragon.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon, man. It's a cult classic, especially in our community. Mm-hmm. It was a kung fu comedy, mm-hmm. type of mm-hmm. film. Ty Mack, he was the guy who was the lead character. He played Leroy Green, aka Bruce Leroy, in the film. A martial arts teacher who kind of falls in love and kind of rescues this R&B pop, music host that was played, Vanity. You know what I'm saying? She played the character Laura Charles in it. And so it's a cool, kung fu action comedy type of film, man. Makes you laugh, great soundtrack, like a lot of films from that era. But it really, to me, was one of the last films in that blaxploitation, movement. They kind of ended around that time, where, you had the comedy aspect, the action kung fu aspect to it, beautiful women, slamming soundtrack, and all those type of things. It really showed Black people in a different light as well. And also has the super villain that everyone knows, Shonuff. I know when we did the event in Cary, man, when he came out into the movie theater, and he does his line, everybody shouts Shonuff. The whole auditorium, 500 people, man, was shouting, And so, yeah, man. So it's it's a cult classic film. Ty Mack still travels around the country, man, at different mm-hmm. Comic-Con conventions, does speaking appearances, and people still show the film to this day, man. He stays yeah. busy with this thing. And the film is still, people still want to show it. And people still want him to come and be a part of this whole cultural phenomenon.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk a little more about this, but, I spent a lot of my childhood just with the entire movie memorized, quoting from it, and almost kind of living by it, trying to pattern myself after Bruce Leroy. In martial arts, the term three chambers typically refers to a concept related to the stance and positioning of the body. It is often associated with traditional martial arts styles like Taekwondo and karate. The three chambers refer to the three key positions or chambers of the body, which are essential for generating power and executing various techniques effectively. Briz, what was the first martial arts film you remember seeing?
Oh man, let me see. I think the first ever joint when I was a kid, it's so many, man. But I think the first one was Enter the Dragon. Enter the Dragon was like the first one. My uncle, he had it on VHS. That was back then, when VHS was kind of a big thing. So, he had that. And then also, my intro, man, was that plus blaxploitation as well. Because blaxploitation, this one guy, I forgot the guy's name, he actually kind of came up with a phrase. He called it Black's Fool. And it's pretty much how blaxploitation, it actually combined a lot of the kung fu elements, as well, to some of those type of movies. Like we showed one as well, man, called TNT Jackson. And it's like a Black's Fool type of thing, blaxploitation mixed with kung fu. So those type of joints, man, those blaxploitation kung fu films, Enter the, all the Bruce Lee stuff for sure, and then after that, man, it was like Steven Seagal, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Chuck Norris, it was those type of things. And then like the lower budget stuff like Gary Daniels, Chuck Jeffries, they were kind of like your B and C martial arts stars back in the day, Don the Dragon Wilson, seeing those type of B and C movies, even though one of my old karate teachers, man, he was in a joint because, Wilmington was big back then. They actually filmed some cool martial arts films back in the day. A lot of people don't know that the first two Ninja Turtles movies back in the day were filmed here. One of my old social studies teachers, man. He was a foot soldier in it. So that was kind of like my first time, man, of seeing someone, you know, even though he was just an extra as a foot soldier, you know, but as a kid, man, we thought that was everything, you know, and he, you know, would play the movie and kind of point out where he was at. And man, just as a kid, man, it just lit my whole world up, man. Like, man, you know, somebody I know was in something like this. And then also one of my old karate teachers, he was in this low budget film called Blood Moon with Gary Daniels and Chuck Jeffries. And he was like, I think like a thug or something that was fighting Gary Daniels and them. And I remember the newspaper made a big deal out of it, man. When he came up to Wilmington, you know, to film those scenes, you know, for a couple of weeks. And again, seeing that as well, man, and thinking that was everything. And so those are kind of the moments that really stick out to me of really sparking my interest in this whole thing of martial arts and stuff like
that. Yeah. You know, I'm impressed that you remember, because I know you must have consumed an enormous amount of like material, just like I did.
Still do.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, I was like, what was the very first, you know, like I wish that I could remember that moment, because
it was Enter the Dragon for me.
Yeah.
It was that,
you know.
And I think like really it was a lot of, you know, a couple of those Bruce Lee joints.
Oh yeah.
You know, that Fist of Fury.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think it really was Chuck Norris after that.
Yeah.
The rest just
I did them all, you know, I did Jim Cotta too, you know.
Oh yeah, I remember that joint. They did a screening of that, man. Because Durham, Carolina Theater in Durham, they have like a retro cinema program.
Yeah.
And they showed that joint last year, man. I was the only person in there. Yeah. I was excited, man. I said, oh, man, I ain't seen this in a long time. Because remember, like those type of joints, man, they would come on like late at night.
Yep. Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And you couldn't really see them. They never showed them during the day. They'd be like late at night on TNT or USA or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Classic stuff, man. American Ninja, all those.
It's amazing. I thought it made total sense. You know, for me, it was, you know, like a revelation. Of course, a gymnast would be able to incorporate martial arts in this like incredible way. Right. Rooftops, you know, roundhouse, all those sort of weird spinoffs. I was willing to watch them all. But you know, later on, I got into, you know, just going to Chinatown and, you know, going to the theater and seeing, you know, all the new Jackie Chan movies, Michelle Yeoh, you know, like. Jet Li.
That's another thing too, man. Yeah. And that's another thing too that you know, how, you know, a lot of the kung fu movies kind of resonated with us in our communities, because a lot of those theaters back in the 70s, man, you know, a lot of those theaters were in the inner cities. Mm. And so when they brought those kung fu movies there, you know, that's all we had. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So we would go and check them out. And a lot of people don't realize that, like, a lot of your movie theaters were in the inner cities back then.
Yep.
And so we were right there in the inner cities, and we saw these films, these guys doing all these crazy stuff and cool stuff, man. Like, yo, we got to be there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Check this out.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that I think about pretty frequently, is just the impact, the aesthetics, the instant meaningfulness of the martial arts, you know, and just why, you know, it makes so much sense to us right from the beginning, right from that sort of, you know, right from conception, you know, it's pretty amazing. I mean, that's the art part of it, I guess. Chris, when did you start cooking up the idea of the festival? What inspired you to initiate it, and what's kind of the personal sort of experiences that inform the cultural influences that drove your decision?
Well, you know, I've always wanted to do something, just, man, anything I do, I always try to be different, outside the box. For example, even when I was filming and came up with the concept of For Wilmington on Fire, you know, there really weren't a lot of people doing any film projects on the 1890 massacre at all, period. I know you see it now.
Yeah.
But when I was doing it, man, wasn't nobody talking about it, doing anything. And so I've always been that type of person, man. I've always wanted to do things different. I've always wanted to think outside the box. I've always wanted to be original with anything I do. And even with the Grandmaster Project, you don't see a lot of documentaries. It's outside of me and another guy I know, he's doing a documentary on the Black Karate Federation. And we chat from time to time just to keep people, you know, keep us each other motivated. If I find some things, I let them know and vice versa. But we're kind of like the only two guys doing anything around African-Americans and martial arts in the documentary world. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I've always been like that, man. I've always wanted to do things different, outside the box, do things new and unique, but also, you know, represent a good balance, you know, as well in the culture. And so Three Chambers is just a, it was just a sure thing, man. You know, I debated on when I wanted to do it. You know, so I've been thinking about doing this for the past couple of years. And I said, you know what? Let me go ahead and launch it this year, get it going. Let's build upon it and see what happens. And so, you know, the whole concept was around, you know, you kind of said it eloquently, you know, at the intro. And but also other factors as well of kind of choosing that name was the three types of artistic expression that we wanted to showcase: art, film, and music. And also the other three as well, the type of artistic expression, you know, hip hop, martial arts, anime, you know what I'm saying? So the three just kept hitting, you know, with everything we wanted to do and highlight with this festival. But not only the festival, man, Three Chambers is actually a brand we're trying to build as well. And so another thing that inspired me to do Three Chambers was really LL Cool J and his whole Rock the Bells imprint. And, you know, I've been a huge fan of what he's been doing with that. And Rock the Bells is pretty much like a whole media platform that really highlights hip hop and the culture of hip hop. But he also has, you know, the Rock the Bells Festival as well. And I said, man, I think I can do that similar. You know, let's build Three Chambers out and make it a media hub for all things hip hop, martial arts, and anime. And so those are some of the things we're going to start rolling out after the festival. We're going to start, you know, looking for some writers that we can set up interviews with a lot of the artists that we're going to be involved in, and a lot of the artists that we've already reached out to. We've been talking to some big name artists. You know, we've talked to people like Lupe Fiasco, Raekwon, Ghostface, a whole bunch of people, man, that are interested in getting involved in this thing. And we want to try to start setting up interviews. And so we can start launching that aspect of Three Chambers, also developing small video content stuff as well, like what you see on Vice and stuff like that. And so Three Chambers Fest is like a part of it that we're launching as well. Like I said, man, LL Cool J and what he did with Rock the Bells was a huge influence and inspiration for me. And I said, you know what, let's do that with Three Chambers and have a cool festival that we can promote a lot of this stuff every year, but also we can be flooding the internet and the community with some cool content throughout the year also.
And, you know, it struck me just then when you mentioned anime that we haven't talked much about it, even though that's obviously an important part of the festival. So how does anime fit in? Like, why'd you decide to include it?
Well, anime, you know, to me, anime is kind of like it fits in with martial arts, mm-hmm. and it fits in with hip hop a little bit as well, because a lot of hip hop artists are connected with martial arts. And a lot of them, especially the younger hip hop artists now, are really connected with the whole anime world, anime culture. Yeah. And so I felt like it was a nice fit. We haven't announced this yet. We're actually locking this down over the next week or so, but we're actually going to add an after party to the Three Chambers Festival.
Okay.
So it's an after party that we call, it's called Trap Sushi. And so, it's an anime themed party. The guy, Troop Brand, he created Trap Sushi out of Atlanta. He's down in Atlanta. Reached out to him. I went to a Trap Sushi party before. I loved it.
Could you explain a little about what Trap Sushi is?
Yeah. So Trap Sushi, man. So Trap Sushi was created by a hip hop artist out of Atlanta called Troop Brand. Mm-hmm. And it's an anime themed party that pretty much blends Black and Asian culture together through music, cosplay, vendors, games, and of course sushi. You know, so at each event they do, they have a live sushi chef on deck. They have these cool cosplay competitions. You know, the DJ is spinning trap hip hop music all night long. They have a couple of anime trap artists you know, that perform as well. And it's a cool gathering, man, of people. It really creates a safe space for people that are in the nerd culture, anime culture, and stuff like that, man. It's a cool, cool vibe party. And so we're setting that up now. So we'll be announcing that in the next week or so, but that's going to be the official after party after we do Can I Kick It?
Right.
And Keenan will be doing the after party, the Trap Sushi after party at Waterline Brewing right after.
All right.
So it's a cool thing, man. And so that's how anime is going to kind of play into this whole festival, is the Trap Sushi aspect, to really embrace that culture along how it goes with hip hop and martial arts.
Okay. So it seems like there was a lot of isolation coming out of the pandemic experience. Is the festival part of a response to that? You know, I think if you having built so much face-to-face community with Wilmington on Fire and having screened it across the state and country, so what did you learn from engaging with the public and about programming cultural content?
I would say I've learned a lot, and I've learned a lot over the years because, you know, I've done it with my own films, Wilmington on Fire. I've done it, you know, my 9-to-5. I'm the artistic director at the Southern Documentary Fund. So we constantly do screens. We just had a screening a couple weeks ago in Durham where we showed a rock and roll documentary called The Elephant Six Recording Company. We fiscally sponsored the project, and we hosted a screening of the film. It was packed, sold out at Motoko Music Hall. And so, you know, I'm used to doing screenings, whether it's for my 9-to-5 or my own projects. But to me, man, you know, folks love the in-person engagement. You know, folks love being around people they love.
Yeah,
I think really it's after the film screening, after the screenings, where the real engagement starts. Yeah. People are talking about it. You know, they're bringing up those questions and talking to their friends or other people. They're meeting new people, you know, because they say, oh, man, what did you think of this film? What do you think? You know, and they actually meet new people. So it does a lot. You know, it brings people together, introduces people to other people that they probably would never meet or even bring up a conversation with. And it's just, you know, just doing something really cool in the arts. And so that's another thing why we wanted to do this as well. Because the pandemic, you know, was so long, and some folks are just kind of just starting to get out of it. You know, I know a lot of people, man, to this day, they still don't do events. They said, no, Chris, I'm not going. I know it's been 3 years. I'm still not doing events. So you still have some people that are still hesitant and still don't want to do it. But I think the majority of people really want to get back out there. They want to mingle. They want to experience new things. And they just miss that whole, you know, being around people and interacting with people more than anything. So that's what I've seen over the years, man. I think it's really after the event is over. It's really where the conversations and the engagement really starts, because after you watch something or, you know, experience a concert or whatever like that, or you see an art show, it's the dialogue that happens afterwards is really where the engagement starts. Hmm. And I think that's what people miss.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, two thoughts come to mind. One is that when I saw Wilmington on Fire, you know, it was a topic of conversation for like the next 2 weeks, you know, just sort of reflecting back on it. And then the other thing is, you know, I remember reading an article about how, you know, when you go into a theater, although, you know, there's this sort of kind of silence around in the movie theater, you are connecting with people even then, because apparently like our breathing starts to sync when we're watching something together. Even our blinking starts to sync. So there is like a collective experience and a, you know, a kind of coming together that happens, you know, right from the start. So speaking of that, like, who are you hoping comes out to the festival, and, you know, what kind of response have you gotten so far?
Oh, man, we've gotten a lot of great response so far from from the general public, even people that I've kind of talked to, you know, about it while we were setting it up. They're like, "Yo, man, that's very different." And it sounds very cool, you know, at the same time. So we're getting a lot of that, man. Like I said, you know, folks that are really into hip hop, they know who Sky Zoo is, they know who Solomon Brigham is, and they're excited to even see them perform here in Wilmington. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? So bringing stuff like this to Wilmington, I think really is why people are excited. Even when we did Can I Kick It of the Last Dragon last October in Wilmington, one brother, he was like, man, he's like, what you doing is like what you would kind of see in New York. You know, right. Something like that. Right.
Yeah.
I said, yeah. So that's another reason why I wanted to do it in Wilmington to you know, where we don't have to go to L.A. or New York or Chicago to experience something in this type of vibe. You know, it's like we can have something like here every year. And I told you that Rock the Bells inspired me. J. Cole's Dreamville inspired me as well. And so I want to grow this thing like another version of Dreamville, especially the music concert part of this, you know, and grow it like another J. Cole's Dreamville, where we can have our own Dreamville type of festival every year in Wilmington.
Yeah. You know,
so I'm expecting a lot of people, because when we do these type of engagements around hip hop and martial arts, like we did in Cary, the crowd is very diverse. I know when we did the thing in Cary, they were like, man, this is probably the most, of a diverse crowd we've ever had in Cary, you know? So I'm expecting the same thing with this because, you know, hip hop, martial arts, man, really transcends a lot of things. You know, we're going to probably get, you know, college students, all the way people like us, man, who grew up on martial arts and hip hop and stuff like that. So you're going to have all that and everything in between, regardless of race, age, gender, man. I think we're going to have a very, very diverse pool of people that are going to come to this and really enjoy it as well. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, the city really supports it and we'll continue to do it as long as we get the support.
And it's a family friendly event or?
No, I wouldn't say family friendly because we with the hip hop, man, you know, we got a lot of slang terminology, and stuff like
certain
that.
Kind
and
of
also
families.
A set of brewery as well. So I wouldn't, you know, it really is 18 and up. It's really preferably 18 and up for the festival. And then, you know, the Crow, you know, it's rated R, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But it's not like, you know, how rated R is now. So the Crow, you might can bring some kids, you know, to check it out. And Trap Sushi, nah, because that's a wild party, man. And some of these folks, especially some of these ladies, man, how they be dressing in these cosplay outfits, man. It's going to be crazy. So, nah, 18 and up. But the thing is, man, with Three Chambers, we want to do things throughout the year as well. We want to be a year-round program. So we will have some things for kids. Because we're already thinking now of next year, next spring, to do like an outdoor Can I Kick It event. May do Ninja Turtles or something like that. And you know how Shaolin Jazz will remix The Score Live. They've done things like, you know, Enter the Spider-Verse and stuff like that. So we are thinking of doing some more family-friendly things throughout the year. But for the festival, nah, it's 18 and up.
Okay, great. And just... you know, take us into our next segment. Favorite moment from The Last Dragon.
Oh man, I think favorite moment from The Last Dragon. I think the ending, man. The ending part where he comes in, man, he has the fly outfit on, the white, you know, and the white with the gold trim. He got the flowers, you know, he got the lady is playing the song, you know, the glow. You know, it's bumping, you know what I'm saying? I think that was my favorite moment, man. And then he embarrassed himself. He's trying to talk, and then they cut the music off. He's like, can you show me some moves? You know, and then the dude was picking at him. And he said, man, that's my brother. He's the master. Yeah. I think that was my favorite part. What about yourself?
Yeah, I think I've got to go with the classic, my favorite joke is, you know, when he's talking to his master and, you know, he's got the talisman that he was given, and he, you know, the master reveals, you know, like, well, a true martial artist would use this to hold up his pants. You know, that was the joke that I loved as a kid. But of course, you know, my favorite moment is the Who's the Master moment. You know, even now, I have a copy of the, you know, like I have watched The Last Dragon recently. And it still, you know, gives me like chills when, you know, he comes.
Oh, man, I wish you could have came. I wish you could have came to our thing and carry, man. But next year, I'm actually thinking about doing that and bringing Tymon down for Three Chambers next year and having Shaolin Jazz like we did in Carrie, have them remix the score live. And so that's actually what I may do next year is bring him down, do The Last Dragon, Shaolin Jazz, do they think with the score, and do a small Q&A on the Tymon and meet and greet thing. So that's probably going to happen next year.
Yeah. And I know he every once in a while says, you know, he's working on part two.
I interviewed him. When I interviewed the Q&A that we showed afterwards, we talked about that. I brought that up. And so him and I forgot the guy's name, who was the original writer of the first one, they actually got some of the rights back. And so they're trying to get the rest of the rights back. Because they actually been working on a concept of doing a sequel. They don't know whether it's going to be a feature or you see how the popularity of Cobra Kai has happened. You know, they could do it maybe as a series as well. And so, but they are working on getting the remainder of the rights back. So he said it is happening. And so, man, I can't wait either for sure. And also, man, when I interviewed him, man, I was so nervous. Because you know, grew up watching this guy, man. I'm actually interviewing him on Zoom. I'm like, oh man.
That has to be an incredible. I don't even know if I could talk to him just because, you know, he stood out like in my childhood as like the ultimate archetype to emulate, you know.
I'll see you the interview, man. I can't share it publicly, but I'll see you the interview. I'll see you part, and also I'll see you some clips from when we did the Can I Kick It as well. But I'll send you guys the interview to check out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll consume as much Last Dragon content as you have.
You got to come down then either for this one or definitely next year, because is to do a Can I Kick It of the Last Dragon in Wilmington and have him come down for that as well.
So I can't have the creator of Wilmington on Fire on without asking for some kind of update on Wilmington Fire 2. Could you talk a little about where you are?
Yeah, man. Well, you know, we're in post-production. It's looking good. You know, we had a couple of setbacks. One, you know, my 9-to-5 takes up a lot of my time. Being the artistic director at Southern Documentary Fund, you know, that takes up a lot of my time. Then also, you know, the death of Larry Rennie Thomas as well. You know, he was a very key component of me even doing the first Wilmington on Fire. You know, Larry, you know, historian, jazz historian also, you know, key figure around preserving the history around 1898, Wilmington 10, and also jazz culture throughout North Carolina as well. And, you know, he's very instrumental in the first film. He was the reason why I pretty much got like 90% of the people that you saw in the first Wilmington on Fire to be in it was because of Larry. He was the first person I ever reached out to when I decided to come up with this concept called Wilmington on Fire. And he's always been supportive. He was a major part of the second one as well. And so, you know, he died a couple months ago. That kind of threw me off a little bit too, because, you know, he was more than just someone in my films. You know, he was a best friend to me as well. And, you know, that really hit hard. And so, you know, that kind of pushed me back a little bit. Also, Three Chambers, getting that stuff set, because Three Chambers is actually going to help push the Grandmaster project also. So we're going to do a lot of cool stuff with Grandmaster as well at the festival. Because, like I said, you know, that project really needs it. Wilmington on Fire is going to be all right. So it's looking like, man, we're going to probably do like a big premiere, I would say, in the springtime. It gives me enough time to make sure everything is right and tight. I want to make sure it's good. How I want it. And not rushing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because really, I'm trying to honor Larry with this thing also. So, but we're going to be showing some exclusive clips at certain programs. I have a Wilmington on Fire 1 screening with the library downtown on November 9th. We're going to show a couple of sneak peek clips from part two. Also, Cedric Harrison is doing Reparations Week right after Three Chambers, the following week. I think it's October 16th through the 20th. And so we're doing a whole bunch of programs during that week, man. He'll be announcing a lot of that next week. But we're going to show Wilmington on Fire on the 20th, October 20th. And then we're going to show like a couple of clips from part two as well, and talk a little bit about that as well. So we'll be, over the next few months, man, we're going to be throwing some new things out there, dropping some snippets, showing some exclusive 5 to 10 minute clips, you know, here and there. And a couple of events that'll be happening in Wilmington in November and October. But yeah, spring is where we're doing it. And we're stepping it up too, man. I don't know if you've seen the sizzle reel and trailer, but we stepped our production quality a lot tenfold. I paid more attention to sound this time around, cinematography. We're also working on the soundtrack as well. We got some big artists that are involved that's giving us some songs we're working with as well. So we really want to do this big because technically this is going to be my last documentary on Wilmington history. So I'm not doing no more stuff on 1898 after this. You know, Wilmington on Fire Chapter 2 is going to be it. There ain't going to be no Chapter 3. So I wanted to make sure I have a nice soundtrack, nice film, the whole nine. And also, during this time of filming Wilmington on Fire 2, I actually had hired a documentary photographer. So she documented our whole process of making the film. And also, she's documenting us editing, also documenting us creating the soundtrack as well. So we're going to have a special commemorative photo book as well to go along with the, you know, with the film and stuff like that. So we'll probably do like some cool photography exhibitions. We're going to do some, you know, probably do like a soundtrack release party, you know. So we're going to do a lot of cool things starting next year with the project, and also doing what we always do, going in the community, doing screenings. But we want to show the artistic side of this project as well, with the soundtrack, the photography and stuff like that also.
Yeah. Well, you know, and just to take a moment to, first of all, offer my condolences about Larry, and then also just to acknowledge that, you know, with Wilmington on Fire, I think you did what every artist hopes to do, which is, you know, through just kind of force of will, it seems, you've brought something into the public conversation nationally that, you know, was purposely made invisible and for, you know, essentially a more than a century.
Right.
So, yeah.
I agree. And I tell people that all the time. I said, man, you know, like what I did, you know, what I've done is a lot of times it takes artists a long time to get there. I did it in my first shot. I got lucky. And like I say, you know, I've been featured in, I mean, when I got featured in the New Yorker, man, I think I told you about it. I said, man, I don't even know what the New Yorker is. He was like, that's a big deal. Man, it's a lot of people. Famous Hollywood directors don't even get in there. That was my first time hearing about the New Yorker. The lady reached out to me. And then also, when we got mentioned during the whole congressional hearing on reparations back in the summer of 2019. Dr. Julianne Malvo told people to watch Wilmington on Fire. We're the only film that was mentioned. And that was crazy too, man. And like I said, when that was going on, I was at home on my lunch break eating some oodles and noodles on Facebook, listening, you know, streaming the thing. And then when she dropped that, man, I got like thousands of emails and Facebook messages and all type of stuff. A whole bunch of people ordered the DVD. And it was crazy, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then also getting celebrities, like with part two, man, you know, we got Hillary Burton Morgan from One Tree Hill. She's involved with the project. We got Peyton Reed. He directs the Ant-Man movies from Marvel. He's involved with the project. So that whole Wilmington on Fire brand, man, I got very lucky, you know, with my first go around, you know, with that project.
Yeah. I mean, I know it wasn't easy though.
It wasn't easy at all, especially making it. It was after we made it, it became easy. But making it, man, you know, I couldn't get any funding. I pretty much had to use a lot of my own money, crowdfunding, and really grind it out. But, you know, I tell people, man, just get through the grind. It's just like with this, with Three Chambers, man. Like I told you, I started doing how we started this, man. We're just showing kung fu movies at bars. That's how we started this thing, man. Just showing old kung fu movies at like dive bars and stuff and just having fun. Yeah. And I didn't think that it would kind of turn into like a cool festival that looks like it's going to grow even more. So
in terms of Three Chambers, what's the best way to get tickets? Like, where do we go online to learn about it? Like, what's the...
For people that are interested, like I said, we're still adding a couple of more events over the next couple of weeks. But we do have tickets on sale now for the concert and also for the Can I Kick It featuring The Crow on sale now. Just go to Three Chambers, the number three, the number three, and chambers.com. So threechambers.com, threechambers.com. It's very simple. Just go there. It has everything. We have the schedule. Where you can get tickets. Also, we have a things to do while you're in Wilmington page as well. So we list a few restaurants, Black History tours, different coffee shops, lounges, places you can shop. You know, so we're building that out too. But we have a page on there because, you know, we want people to explore the city, especially people that are coming from out of town. We want people to really explore what Wilmington has to offer. And also we want to try to drive some type of economic boost to the city as well, especially to a lot of minority businesses or businesses that are really in support of what we've been doing as well and support the arts. And so that's why we created that section on the website as well. So people can come check out what we're all about, what the city has to offer. So, you know, hopefully, man, they want to come back more often or maybe move here.
Solutions journalism is an approach to reporting that focuses on uncovering and examining potential solutions to societal issues. We want to thank you, Chris, for speaking with us today, for taking the effort to create a unique cultural offering to the coastal region. This all sounds amazing, and we are looking forward to the Three Chambers Festival. That concludes our show. Chris, thanks again for joining us. We hope you gained a deeper understanding of the challenges and triumphs experienced by the vibrant communities of coastal at sea. Remember, the stories we explore here shape the path ahead. Thanks for listening. Learn more about Shoresides at www.shoresides.org. I'm Ren Smith. Thanks for listening. On the bathroom wall where my number is written, diving on the sidewalk, looking back at the sky is burning in my rear.